So welcome back to this second session, which is entitled Exploring the Four Fundamental Lesson Skills. And we're going to take an hour to look at the four lessons in a nutshell, see if we can unfold them even deeper inside ourselves, even faster inside ourselves, because they are really technically four separate lessons. But they're actually intertwined. What was revealed to me as I began to work with the course, put together in a structure, and over time teaching it again and again and again, was that there is this beautiful tapestry of the way they fit together. So none of those lessons really are complete without all the other three. And yet each one on their own is enough for a complete and profound awakening to occur if you fall in love with any particular one. So just a few things I want to go through before we dive into that, before I forget. The first is that we are going to have some longer breaks in the schedule. You might see from the schedule there are half an hour breaks. There's a whole hour break in the middle, which yes, you can use to, I don't know, get some sleep if you're up early or get something to eat. But most important use of that time that I could really, really sincerely recommend is we're just going to have an informal sangha in those breaks. I won't be on there, so you can just go on there and express whatever you want to express. And I would really recommend using that time to interact with fellow graduate program family members and getting to know people perhaps that you might not. In any kind of spiritual group like this, there's those people we immediately feel a resonance with. There's those people we might feel some resistance to getting to know. And those particular people are where the richest spiritual reward comes from, because the mind is resisting those relationships where we're going to get the maximum karmic benefit, because they're usually people with very similar spiritual karmic patterns as to our own. So if I was in your position right now, I would, one of the things I encourage in the graduate program is to find a buddy to study the course, the lessons with. And if I was in your position right now, knowing what I know now, I would make friends with everyone that would have me as a buddy. I would contact everyone. And then understanding, of course, that there's time, you know, time limitations for all of us. We all have busy lives. But that would be what I would do and would recommend, as many people as you can possibly make friends with, even if all that is an email once a month saying, hi, how are you doing? And it'd be those that you end up spending a lot of time with on WhatsApp or meeting up. There'll be those that you see in the sanghas, there'll be those that you see on the classes, those that you don't speak to very much. But the more relationships you have, this is your real family. Our family of birth is our family of birth. But these graduate program members are people that are going to walk with you for the rest of your life and beyond, because they want what you want, they value what you value. And that's no small gift that we've all been given, this family. So I would really use that time. I've also left the chat box open. So if you want to message someone directly, privately, you can get to know them. You can also, obviously, there's a graduate program Facebook group. And now we also have, I'm really excited, a graduate program, worldwide graduate program WhatsApp group, which is has a very festive feeling going on today. We've had some deep discussions in there already. If you want to be a part of that, you can just join it and read. You don't have to participate or comment. It's entirely up to you. It's a great way to get to know people. And we're having some fun in there too. So if you want to be a part of that, you can join that anytime. If you contact Shyster, who is online here with us today, there's also a post in the graduate program group about it, Facebook group. And she will add you to that. She's volunteered graciously to be admin of that to help me out. So whichever way you contact someone and get to know someone, don't let your resistance to doing that or be more powerful than your urge to awaken. If there's one thing we could all do right now to speed our awakening, it would be to make contact with a fellow graduate program member. Even more important, perhaps, than applying the lessons at this point, because one of the core feelings that held me back was I need to do this on my own. Now, sharing in the WhatsApp group yesterday, I think, that when I really hurt my shoulder the first time, I found myself in a position where I couldn't lift a pen, couldn't drive my car, couldn't put my own clothes on. I had to get my children to help me get dressed in the morning. Very, very humbling experience. And it taught me I had to let other beings help me, other bodies in the one being help me. But if I was just focused on one body, I want to do this awakening. I'm going to do it by myself. I'm going to prove my worth by doing this by myself. And it really backfired on me. I was fiercely independent, something I'd always prided in myself, driven, motivated. But that became something that held me back in my awakening. I was still driven, still focused, all of that. But I realized the value that all of this is this unique tapestry of all of us working together. You know, people uploading the files, people doing the videos, people hosting sanghas, answering emails, everything. There's a whole network of people. Everyone that's sharing any video that I've ever done or audio or talking about me or reading a book or giving a book to someone else or talking about non-duality is part of this huge tapestry, this interwoven thing that's going on. And the more you consciously work with that, the richer your life becomes. So please, 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 please reach out to someone, or perhaps more. You know, maybe make it your goal over this month to find 2 or 3 new GP buddies. And yes, there's an awkwardness at first, as in the getting to know each other phase. But you might, the first time, expose yourself to a different culture, a different way of doing things, a different way of looking at things. And the reflection you get when you look at what they're challenged with, when you help them through that, there's nothing more powerful spiritually. Nobody gets more benefit out of this intensive than me, because having to explain this, put it into some kind of thought and conceptual framework, is it makes it go deeper. And as you work with someone, either in a group that we'll look at later, the power of a community, or just one body or a group, you know, wherever 3 or more gather in my name. Is it 3 or is it 4? I can never remember. But you get the idea. There's a power in that. Even 2 of you together, it's magnified. It's huge. And again, I'll talk about that more later. So, okay. So we're going to look at the 4 lessons here, and I'm going to go through them in a quick way at first, and then we'll look at how they all weave together. You're going to naturally have one of the 4 lessons that you feel more aligned to. You're also going to have one of the lessons that you feel really resistant to, at least one. And usually that's lesson 2. Nobody likes lesson 2 until you're like really, really deep into your awakening. Then it becomes stunningly beautiful. And in fact, the backbone in which all the other 3 are hanging on. You could take any one of them, that they're holographic in the way, you could take any one lesson and study it infinitely for the rest of this month, and you'd understand all the rest of them deeper. So my advice would be to do a well-rounded study of them all, but knowing what human beings are like, there's probably one that you just love. Every time we go around the course, and as graduate program members, you have access to every group course that we do for free. Highly encourage you to join each and every one, to always be a student, just like I am. I'm never going to be finished my deepening, and that's a joyful thing. So as I go through these lessons, just listening to which one you feel a deep resonance with. And each time you go through the course, each time the graduate program we go through, you know, next month, January, we'll be looking at lesson 2. February will be looking at lesson 3, etc., and around we go. You'll get deeper into each one every time. there is, I could spend 100,000 hours talking about each lesson and still never get to the bottom of it and still unfolding for me inside. And that's not a terrible thing. That's a endless discovery of love, of my real essence unfolding this way. So I'd really urge you to, if you can, stop trying to get to an end point and just enjoying the fact that we're getting it deeper today. Today, right now, this is going in deeper. So lesson one then is to focus on the noumenon. And it's where we all start. We're all so disenchanted with life as a separate being. Disenchanted, devastated, destroyed. Lots of other words that begin with DE. And none of us, it's extraordinarily rare that a being comes to satsang just because they're excited that there's something else to discover. I've never met one, ever. I'm open to it, of course. But most of us come because our life as a separate being is just not working. Perhaps even more than that, it's failing. Epically, it's just not working. It doesn't function. There's an abundance of everything we do not want in the manifestation and a total lack of peace, love, and joy on the inside. And if we're all sort of open to why we ended up attending our first satsang or whoever that was with, or the first book we read about truth, or even the understanding that there was something else to understand that we hadn't fully grasped, even the recognition I'm not living in reality, I'm living in my thoughts. That was driven by some kind of intense suffering for most of us, wasn't it? Even if you look at a being like Ramana, who just kind of spontaneously woke up at 16, decided to figure out what it was like to actually die and became liberated from that, still took him years afterwards to integrate that awakening. And he would have done a lot of that previous suffering that brought most of us here in the last incarnation he had before that one. So whatever brought us here, it's really, I don't like this. And then lesson one is, okay, look at this instead. Just a simple shift of focus, lesson one. That's all. That the more time we can spend bringing attention to what is real and stable and permanent and unchanging, then the effect that that has is it's stopping adding to the momentum of this separate sense of self. Immediately when we withdraw attention from that, even for a second, a nanosecond, there is a letting go of spinning the plates on these poles, and they begin to fall off on their own. That one thing in itself is enough to bring attention away from the egoic sense of self. However, most of us don't have an understanding, at least at first, of where else we can bring attention. If not on phenomena, then what else? It's all we're trained to do, to notice thoughts, objects, tangible, intangible, experiences, emotions, sensations in the body. And for the longest time, we're not even aware that there is anything else. And because we're caught in so many causality loops, as we'll go into next, the phenomena keep drawing our attention. We keep trying to fix that and fix that. If I can just change my life, I'll be happy, says the separate sense of self. And haven't we all tried that? Who knows how many incarnations have come and gone while we've been trying that? An infinite number, probably. So lesson one is a fundamental shift that all I need to do is to bring my attention to the background in which my experience is happening, in which my body is appearing, in which my thoughts are coming and going, by whichever name I'm calling that. And for each one of us, we all have our particular constitution, our makeup, in our body mind, and there's a certain word that may have a stronger pull than others. And you need to find that magnetic pull. What is it that when you hear it or sense it, that it has this I want to know more about that. And for me, that was the silence and the stillness. Same thing, consciousness, presence, beingness, here-ness, now-ness, contextual field, the knower, the subjectivity of our own nature, awareness, isness, awakeness, emptiness, nothingness, whichever word, God, divine self, noumenon, even noumenon, that's the, you know, the super duper awakening. So whichever word pulls you, and that may be different today than it was yesterday, and it may be different now than it was the session before this one. Sometimes the utter emptiness of being would just be so appealing to me. Empty, just empty of separate self, empty of substance, and yet totally pregnant with full of potential, everything in potential, nothing in actuality. Yet, immensity of power, completely devoid of any separate sense of self, just this vast expanse of emptiness. And it was like, I want to know what that is. There's this utter devotion to that. Sometimes just the word silence was enough to kind of connect me with it. And I say connect, but that's not really the experience. Just absolute absence of any sound or even the possibility of sound. Just silence. Stillness, so restful that nothing could ever move in it, ever. Nothing has or could ever move. Not the absence of movement, not coming to rest, but rest itself, where there's the impossibility of any movement. It is just that. Beingness, just this sense for me, different time in my life, the beingness was just so appealing. The fact that it is being, and there is nothing that can stop that being. It just is. It cannot be killed. The actual non-beingness, and the same with existence, the sense of non-existence was just so laughably impossible. That the word being was just this certainty. And I'm just explaining how I fell in love with each word, each different doorway, to try to ignite some kind of fire here inside, because it's really important. What does that word mean to you today, now? Here-ness, absolutely present, this presence that is undeniable at all times, in all places. Consciousness, awakeness, pure sentience, knowingness that is beyond whatever it knows, and inside of it, and underneath it, and all around it. Present before, during, and after all phenomena. So whichever way you fall in love, let's make this a love affair. Let's just, like, and my job is to kind of tantalize you with words, and just kind of, like, which one is going to really get you today? Which one of those is really going to get you today? And, you know, yesterday it might have been silence, but maybe today it's awakeness. There's something vitally awake, alert. There's something aware that cannot be unaware. It can never look away. It can never do anything other than look. It is utter awareness. It doesn't need anything to be aware of. It's just aware. So looking again at the list and falling in love all over again, will you fall in love today again with the noumenon and tomorrow and the day after? Because every time you fall in love, it's going to be deeper, more amazing and beautiful than any human love affair. And that's pretty powerful from the awakened state. It's just infinite expression of love. And yet from the source of love, the essence of love, which is your real nature, the only reliable thing you have that's not going to leave you ever, because it never came. The only thing that's always here for you to depend upon is your own fundamental nature. So tuning into whichever way and use whatever word turns you on, but find out what it is. Find out what gets you going, what excites you. It's all right to get excited about something like this, isn't it? Spiritual work doesn't have to be, oh, here we go again. I'm going to have to sit down and meditate now, and I really don't want to do this. Yesterday, focused on the silence. I know what it is. It's just dull and it's boring. Well, no, if you haven't felt passion in a long time, now's your chance. Get passionate about this, because this is really important. And I know you know that, otherwise you wouldn't be here, but just to say it's okay. So people get passionate about a new item of clothing, a new car, a new addition to the family. They get passionate about winning the lottery, all kinds of things, about movies, about people, famous celebrities. Will you get at least as passionate about this? And just accepting, if you can, with me right here, right now, that there's no end. Today, as I was sitting here this morning, the silence introduced itself to me in a way that it has never before. And I can't put words to that, because it just is so subtle. But it makes me cry pretty much every time I sit and focus. And even if I continue to talk like this for another few minutes, I'll be in tears, because of how beautiful it really is. So find your doorway in, as many as you can, as many as you can. It's beautiful. There is an infinite richness, which is paradoxical, because there's absolutely nothing there. There's nothing there, and there's no one to enjoy silence. And yet enjoyment is all there is in it. So what's going to pull us away from that silence or stillness or consciousness? It is the phenomena that we keep giving attention to. Why certain people, things, all of that begin to pull our attention, continue, maybe even begin to pull attention even stronger once we've fallen in love with the noumenon, by whichever name. Because they are reflection, that emotion, that person, that lack of something, that excess of something that we'd like to get rid of, some emotion perhaps, or whatever it is that's happening that pulls our attention away seemingly from our spiritual work, is showing us some thoughts, and we move into lesson two. Lesson one and lesson two fit together like a glove. I'm seeing through the thoughts that pull me away from the noumenon more and more, and I contemplate if those are true. I come back to peace. When I'm in peace, I can focus on what's real about me even more. And as I focus on what's real about me even more, what no longer fits in with my awakened stance is going to come to the surface for me to be seen. And as I look at that and contemplate it deeper, I'm going to come back to peace. And around it goes in a loop. It's actually beneficial now for us, a thought loop. And never will we be shown clearer the thoughts that are reflecting as our experience and when we're falling in love with the noumenon. Because all of life then is working to help us deepen. We can participate with that consciously. So what are the emotions that we're not looking at? And what story is that emotion just knocking on the door of our heart? Please let me tell you what I really feel is true, so that you can question it. Not because I want to punish you, not because I want to make you feel bad, but I just need your help to question this belief. The emotion is saying to you, will you listen to me today? Will you listen to me more intimately? Will you be the awareness of me today? Will you fall in love with me? Will you be conscious only of me and not try to do anything with me? Will you be the consciousness? Will you make space in your heart today for me? I know you don't like me, says shame, or want to feel me, says fear or anger. But I just need to tell you a story and then I can go. I mean, I really got that. There was this beautiful dovetail back between lesson two and lesson four. That whatever emotion was there was present. It was really the formless reality in disguise, asking me to fall in love with it, dressing up like fear, shame, guilt, belief in lack, all of that. Asking me, giving me one more beautiful opportunity to fall in love. That there weren't, in fact, only these 14 words for the self, or however many. There was also these other beautiful synonyms for peace called fear. And anger and frustration and apathy and sadness and grief and guilt. Despair, hopelessness, whatever the feeling that was going on, as lesson two deepened for me, there was this recognition that this word, this label for this emotion is a synonym for bliss, for peace, for joy, for love, for my essential nature. And that all I have to do is to fall in love with it, not fall in like with it, fall in love with it, to have it reveal its secret to me, its story, and then it will turn spontaneously back into peace and contentment as I contemplate, if it's actually true. So there's a maturing then that happens with lesson two, that I stop avoiding the experiences in my life. I've got to go through them anyway. But I can go through them more consciously with less resistance, working with them in a conscious way, they can change much faster. But the only reason something is happening again and again and again is because I haven't fully fallen in love with the emotion and the story that it's trying to tell me. I don't feel worthy of love, or I can't get what I want, or I'm in desperate, desperate danger. Life is unfair. There's something fundamentally wrong with me. We all have to look at these stories at some point. Why not do that consciously? Milking the rewards from that, then a deeper silence dovetails back into lesson one and around. As we start to get clear of some of these stories, we're going to fall deeply in love with lesson three then. Because when we begin to discover that the separate being that we thought we are is this cyclic thought loop, as we were saying earlier, and that all we need to do is detach a few entry points onto the roundabout, that is this separate sense of being. I'm not good enough. I'm in danger. I can't get what I want. That if we even begin to, here in the UK, there's a particular route I've got to go backwards and forwards several times a week at the moment, and they absolutely love putting traffic cones, roadworks, temporary traffic lights here in the UK. You can't go too far without encountering any of those, and I suspect it's probably the same in every country in the world, at least those that have roads. So we're just coning off these entry points, we're putting diversions back around away. Instead of getting on this roundabout, we're going back to the new one on. That's all we're doing. We're blocking this one off. No entry here. Can't get on this thought loop here. Why? Because I can't give much validity to the idea anymore that I'm not safe or that there's something wrong with me. I can't really do that anymore after I've contemplated. And as the peace builds, as you begin to get your own contentment back, the energy that it's simply the energy that we've invested in believing these thoughts and pushing away the experience, then lesson three just becomes so appealing. And it's been a period in my life where I focus on every lesson only to the exclusion of everything else. All other spiritual practice stopped, just obsession, not from a decision, like now I'm going to stop this and focus only on lesson three, but it just happened spontaneously. Something kind of exploded inside. that when I recognize I'm looking from the silence at this thought loop, being mind, separate sense of self, that I'm not the one actually living it, the fundamental recognition that my mind is not talking to me. In fact, it's not talking to anyone. It's just talking. That this separate sense of self is nothing other than a bunch of thoughts talking to themselves and using other body-mind vehicles to reinforce itself over and over again in what we call human relationship. That there is then this deeply falling in love. What does it look like from the self? An obsession developed for me trying to find this separate being. Like, if it's here, if I am a separate being, I should be able to find it. And on and on and on I went, like 100 times a day. It was the last thing I did before I went to sleep at night, searching my being, scanning my being. Can I find this separate person? And the joy, the rapture, the bliss, the ecstasy that began to develop from just not finding anyone ever. And that wasn't ecstatic at first. That was just, so what does that, you know, doesn't really impact me. It's not there. So but what began to happen is it accumulated along with lesson one. The more we focus on what's real, there's more light, more power to focus, more power to stay with a question in the body-mind vehicle, more power to your discipline, more power to feed your habits, more power to come out of illusion faster. So it gets easier and easier and easier. You focus on illusion, you're disempowering the body-mind, and it's very challenging to get anything done, stay with anything. Focus on what's real as much as you can. Even a nanosecond of truth, listening to the silence, can make you the whole next hour much more peaceful. And if you're doing that on purpose, if you're scanning and not finding anyone and finding only the infinite silence, the emptiness of your own being, that's all you find when you look. It begins to spread out through your past and your future. There never is, was, or will be a someone ever. There never has been. And the ramifications of that are just epic. They vibrate throughout all of your imagined past lifetimes. And that our karmic patterns are just that, thought patterns. They belong to nobody. They're just floating around in the ether. And the recognition deepens then that what I'm actually doing in my contemplative work is just looking at it and seeing it's not true, never was. I don't have to overcome it, transcend it, go beyond it. I'm already beyond it. I am what that pattern is made of. And on thoughts too. And that work, lesson one's work, lesson two's work, is so much more effective and powerful when you recognize where you're doing it from. That there is, in fact, only the infinite self. That this question, am I looking at or from the self, becomes the best joke you've ever heard in your life. First, it's like, oh. And it's like, that's actually kind of funny that I ever thought I was looking at the self trying to get to it. And then it just becomes hilarious, although you understand why you used to be so transfixed with that idea completely. So this deepening happens in the recognition that all there is you. And that you're using all these experiences, these human bodies, including your own one, this one that's talking, all of it, to build this rich tapestry. And it's all about your awakening. This whole universe is about your awakening. It sounds really egotistical like that, doesn't it? But nonetheless, it's true. All of this is for you. And every power that is, the only power that is, begins to move heaven and earth to help you when you really begin to see this. And this is where this first talk that I did came from, because I began to see, if I just do these same few things consistently, focus with a laser-like intensity, whatever intensity that is today for me, might not be a lot today. Tomorrow might be total obsession. Obsession is another word for devotion, isn't it? Devotion in non-duality is very acceptable. Obsession is like, oh, that's a bit unhealthy. Or we could call it love. You're already completely and utterly in love and obsessed, or else you wouldn't be here in this intensive, in this life. You came back to, you have this human incarnation to do this most vital work, first as an individual and then as a collective. So every spare second I could find, I used to spend whole journeys driving to my sister's, like 45 minutes, just searching my being. Can't find. And it moved from something I was doing to get somewhere, to undo identification with a separate being, with the body. To just, it feels so damn good to do it, that I'm going to do it because of that. Somewhere along the way, the seekingness fell away. And then I began to fall in love with lesson one even more. And everything, every time I listen to the silence, I'm loving myself. I'm honoring myself. I'm respecting myself. And that every time I contemplate, is this thing really true? That is a worship or a self-reverence of epic proportions. So to be truth in action, to be love in motion, is contemplation, isn't it? I really would actually like to know if this thing is true. And in the joy, it really begins to flood into your life from a deep understanding of lesson three, that this work that we're doing may never be finished. And would you really want it to be, if it's ever more blissful, joyful, freeing, empowering, ever more infectious on the people around you, ever more beneficial to the world? This stuff might still come up, like thoughts, like I was saying previous session about shame for me, but it doesn't come with any negative impact in the body. It's like, oh, here's just somewhere where I'm still thinking I'm slightly less than everyone else. Oh, look at that, you know, just something like that. And this beautiful surge of love for these thoughts and for my beautiful body showing me by this pain in my shoulder. And I would not have been able to look at it like that as a separate self. It'd be, why is this still going on? Why am I failing? What aren't I seeing? This should be done by now. I should be beyond this by now. Why is it coming back? What am I doing wrong? I'm sure I'm describing every thought that you have in your head as I'm saying these things. And you have your own version of those reasons that you're failing, so to speak, which is, you know, another part of that cycle of separate self, isn't it? Doing this work as and from the self, the conscious recognition of your own. Like, these things are going to come up in front of me just so I can turn them back into peace, into love, into joy, free them up into human vibration. There is no more auspicious, greater work. Even the word work, way to spend our life. There's no greater obsession, passion, purpose. And in doing that consciously as the self, it will begin to reflect as some outer experience that only you can do in that particular way. And there's a whole group of people just desperate to get to know the way you do it. Whatever it is, they're hanging on waiting for you. They might not know that yet, but they are there. And they're going to so love the way that you do whatever you do, that your life will feel blessed and joyful, peaceful. You go to bed each night with a deep sense of contribution and passion and purpose. and feeling like you really are Santa, you know, going around giving these presents, invisible silent presents to everyone. And from that, naturally then, from that deep and rich understanding of lesson three, doing this work out of joy rather than out of trying to get somewhere. And they'll be both for a while in this switchover. And if you stop looking at when we're trying to get somewhere falls away, it will fall away. I don't know when it fell away from me. I just know that it did at some point. All there was just deep desire to discover and explore. That's all that there was left. And I say all that there was left. That's all there ever really was. Then naturally this love affair with lesson four begins to really kick in, like really gain some momentum. What if the only place I can look is myself? What if there aren't actually any phenomena at all? Or what if the word noumenon, the words noumenon and phenomenon are actually synonyms? What if there is only one thing? There is no truth or illusion. It's all the same thing showing up two different ways. What if my obsession with non-duality has brought me to the end as far as the mind could go and to realize that there is not two, there is only one. It can show up as form or formless, silence or sound, awareness and what I'm aware of, consciousness and what I'm conscious of, here-ness and there-ness, now-ness and then, or will be future and past. It can show up as beingness and not beingness, existence and non-existence. It's so epic that it can show up, apparently epic is my word of the day, so sorry, as both of those. And it's the same fundamental thing. How can it possibly show up as everything and nothing at all? How does it do that? How does something that is utterly formless appear as the solidity of a planet, of a cosmos, of a galaxy, of a universe, of a speck of dust, of a thought, of a human body? How does something that is nothing at all become a black hole? And yes, all the scientists and astrophysicists and all of that, you know, and I could give you a good explanation of how that happens. But the mystery of it in your heart, can you feel some kind of deep love affair? How does it do this? How does it do this? How does it make this sound when it's made out of silence? How can silence sound so beautiful and appear so beautiful? And how can stillness move or seem to move? How can consciousness, undivided, indivisible consciousness, appear to divide itself into infinite parts so convincingly that we all buy it for such a long time? How does it do that? And what would it be like to see the unmoving, infinite stillness, silence, consciousness, wherever we look, whatever we eat, whatever we touch, whatever we see and hear and explore, whoever we hug, whichever land we go to, whatever experience we have next and forever, however many bodies come and go from this point forward in your individuality. What would it be like to never lose sight of your essential nature, to feel the same bliss when you're feeling fear as when you're feeling peace? Because you know what that fear is, actually. Or maybe you groove more on saying, you've no idea what it is, actually. That when you look at the worst of human society and the best, and worst and best only in relative terms of evolution, understanding, reflection of truth, not in terms of any judgment, that you see the same thing. You see Shiva everywhere you look. But you're married to Krishna. That your children are the Buddha right there in front of you. That your pets, that your relatives, that your boss, your mother-in-law, everything, everyone, your bank manager, your debt collector, everything and everyone is this. This is the richness and the profoundness of lesson four. How to really get to the essence of lesson four. Curiosity, fatal curiosity, fatal because it will kill your ability to suffer or believe in yourself as a separate being. If you're seeing yourself everywhere, the most beautiful divine essence in disguise everywhere. Flimsy disguise in lesson four, very flimsy, but fun nonetheless. Not even disguise then, just dressing up to look like different things. And the joy of giving all of these names, nouns, naming words, that all become synonyms for your very own self. There is this kind of fundamental shift then, an eagerness to get at life, to participate in it, to indulge yourself in all of this you-ness, because it's utterly safe and devoid of suffering. And not only that, it has this magic wand effect on everything around you. Everything becomes harmless around your particular body, wherever that is, in time and space. Everything is infected with this infusion of love and peace and harmlessness. Non-violence, joy, to whichever extent that particular form is able to reflect that back to you. And animals get it. They absolutely get it completely. That's why Rob's dog took the best seat in the house straight away. That's why my cat is sitting right now in my favorite comfy chair. They get it. The plants, the animals, they all get it. They will respond to you in a way you've never experienced before. Even some human beings, they'll begin to respond to you. And eventually all human beings in a way that's different. As lesson four deepens. Because your words might say, talk like a separate being still, and they probably should, because most people aren't ready for this understanding yet. But your energy is utterly in love with them, fascinated. And it's all you can do to not hook random strangers in the street or in the airport or the supermarket. And life begins to play with you. It's always been trying to, it's just we weren't receptive to it. The most fun, exquisite moments. I had one this morning outside the supermarket with a man that was homeless. We had a conversation. I gave him a sandwich and some coins that I had. And we were talking, and it was -2 Celsius here, and he's outside in nothing but a jacket. But the deep discovery of the richness and intimacy that we shared, it was only about 2 minutes. And somebody else came along then to give him something. It doesn't have to be with a homeless person, it could be anybody, but there was this rich connection, rich, deep. And those are happening all over my life, all the time, getting better all the time. That's how life can be from lesson four. So lesson one and lesson four begin to beautifully merge together, and the whole cycle goes around again. Focus on the noumenon. Lesson four tells us that's all there is. Wherever I look, I'm utterly in love. Whatever my eyes land upon, I'm besotted, fascinated, obsessed. So, whichever one of those you feel most in love with, start there, and the rest will reveal their fullness to you in time. Probably for most people, lesson two is going to be the one they like least. For most of us, lesson four is the one they find most challenging. But it's also the simplest. It's most challenging because it's the simplest. That you are swimming around inside yourself at all times and could never not be. Is lesson four, really, in one sentence. And just the urge, again, the simple power of a desire as an awakened being that you are, to want to see that. Has to be, no if or when, just has to be fulfilled. Has to be. And is being. So this has been a couple of long sessions where you've just had to sit and listen. Probably some resistance is coming up. You can see as this hour has gone by, more yawning and stretching and, you know, people sort of moving around. And because this kind of stuff is going to bring resistance to the surface, restlessness. But, you know, if you're in a graduate program intensive like this, you guys are hardcore, you know, you've really, really obsessed as much as I am. So I want to thank you for that and for listening. And I hope that I've inspired you to really go back to these four lesson skills again. It's the only thing I'm doing every day. That's really what my life is. I sit at home in the morning and dive into lesson one. I go out into the world, dive into lesson four. Same, same. Somewhere in between, lesson two and three just kind of happen. There is no center of my being. There's no location for myself. It's everywhere. And this is the foundations. This is also the advanced stuff. If it doesn't feel advanced, maybe just fall in love with it a bit more. And the ones that come to utter and complete freedom, sagehood, whilst in a body, are the ones that will keep strengthening the foundations. The ones that wander off the path, allow themselves to be distracted, and come back eventually, maybe this lifetime, maybe another one. That's why we help each other here. That's why we do these classes. That's why we meet, why we have sanghas, why we have buddies, all of that. There is nothing more important than this or worthwhile. And everything else that you could do with your life is this anyway. Thank you.